This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio, WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Hey there, good evening, and welcome to Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. I'm Brian Sexton, along with Jeff Lagerman, Vic Ketchman, and Joe Fortunato, and we invite you to join us as well. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. 2 hours tonight. Happy to have you with us, guys. How are you?
Good, real good.
Doing very well.
Locky's got his big bag from the burrito gallery.
Who I do. I got me some chips, some nacho action, some salsa, and the green stuff, man. You better.
That's why we pointed you to the door.
You better have a fire extinguisher close by when you go to the green.
Yeah.
Which I like it.
We just need a great big fan to kind of blow your direction.
Come on,
carry
now,
it all
that's later
all
on.
Out.
That's later
all
on.
Out the door, ladies and
You'll
gentlemen.
You'll be safe for the next 2 hours.
I'm safe for sure. I'm on this side of the table. All right, you got the phone numbers. Jaguars and Dolphins passed. Jaguars and Bucks coming up on Saturday night. And what thoughts, where do you want to start with this one? Because obviously we can share some thoughts from Monday night in Miami, which really wasn't all that far ago.
No, it wasn't. Usually by this point, you know, we're 3-4 days removed, and so we've kind of moved past the preseason game. But, I mean, we're only 2 days after the fact. It hasn't been talked about by you because you haven't started yet, have you? The Vic Ketchman show?
It's going to be, what's it going to be called?
Ask Joe? Vic Live.
No,
we changed that?
Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday with Vic Ketchman.
Jaguars Reporters, but we lost a reporter, so we didn't want to just call it Jaguars Reporter, so we changed the name entirely, and it's going to be Jaguars Monday.
Right, it's going to be entertaining. You're going to do a great job with it.
Some Mondays will be Dark Monday. And
many Mondays will be Dark Mondays with you, Mr. Glass is half empty.
So you were asking thoughts.
I'll call in every now and again to cheer you up.
I'm
maybe.
Sure you
How about
will.
That?
Yeah. We'll do just fine without you.
Joe, I feel for you, brother.
That's a bold statement. Turning down Listen, phone calls already.
The guy who used to do the show. Was sensational in the because he put the whole thing together. Cole Pepper.
You can't say that name on the show.
Can't?
No, I'm kidding. Of course you can.
He scripted it. You know, I put it. He gave me an outline. What do you think of this outline? I'd act like.
And
I
you
was,
didn't look at yeah, it. Yeah, that's great.
Exactly. I'd act like I was looking at. It. Hey, that's great, Cole. Good job. No. I mean, come on, it's only an hour show, and the phone lines are lit up with people who want to either. Put the Jaguars in the Super Bowl or run them out of town, mm-hmm. You know, it's because it's the day after the game. And we'd do this variety show, which is basically what it was because we didn't take a lot of calls. Well, we won't be that tightly scripted this year. We'll have one reporter, and it'll be pretty loose. So if you want to call in, I think you'll get airtime.
Well, when does that start for you?
Next
Monday,
yeah.
6 o'clock.
Yep.
Vic Ketchman.
And then once he gets off the air, folks can turn on CBS 47 and watch Jaguars All Access, which
That's right.
starts on Monday night
we
also.
Start on Monday night as well.
For sure. Getting into the swing of things, ladies and gentlemen.
So your thoughts, Vic, on Monday night. I like to go to the big picture stuff first. Can you, your
all right,
big picture.
All right, here's the big picture. First of all, there's only one preseason game that counts in my mind, and that's Game 3. That's the one where David Garrard's going to play 3 quarters. That's the one where Maurice Jones-Drew is going to get 9-10 carries. That's the one where you want to play well, where you want to treat this for 3 quarters as though it's a regular season game. Game 3, and this one's in Philadelphia, which is pretty primo. Michael Vick.
For more than one reason.
You know, dun-dun-dun-dun. We're going to have some lights. You know, we're going to have some music for this one.
A ton of media.
Exactly.
An absolutely packed stadium.
Exactly. So we're going to have a preseason game of some importance, of some intrigue, of some hype. And what happened Monday was, as far as I was concerned, a glorified scrimmage.
That's all it is.
Monday in Miami.
And then the reason you can kind of tell how teams treat the first preseason game is, you know, when you watch practice prior to preseason games, when you start to see the cards come out, which mm-hmm. means they're showing the looks of the opponent, then you know that they're starting a game plan. Mm-hmm. You know, they're starting to show the looks of the opponent. You don't see that mm-hmm. prior to the first preseason game. Very, very simple game plan, both offensively and defensively. And that pretty much goes for both teams. I mean, no, I don't think most teams all treat it about the same.
Four times the Dolphins ran up the middle on third and long. Four times.
And then if you look in the past preseason under the Jaguars, they would be in a two-minute defense, okay, two-minute drill. And what defense would they run? They'd be in their base package playing regular first right. and second right. down defense.
Which they would never do.
Not for a game. So yeah. So you're right. The first preseason game is glorified scrimmage. But what you really get out of the first game is analyzing the individual play.
Bingo. And there was a play, for instance. I'll give you a classic example. Maybe I'm inventing it because I haven't asked anybody, but I took it this way. Here's a classic example of what you do in a preseason game as we had on Monday. You know, you're trying to evaluate players. They ran a play where Jarrett Dillard was in the slot on the butt of a receiver who ran straight up the seam, and then Dillard cut behind him across the middle. The guy cleared out, Dillard cut behind him.
Caught the ball.
Yeah, with no one on him.
Yeah.
Why do you do something like that? You want to see what the guy does with the ball in his hand mm-hmm. in the open field. See what I mean? Simple stuff like that. That play wasn't designed. That play wasn't called to gain yardage, as much as it was put in the game plan or it was put in the playbook to find out what this kid could do in the open field with the ball in his hands.
And he had a very nice night.
Good.
He had a really
solid. How many catches
did
Dillard have?
Two. He only had a couple catches.
Two catches.
I think there was one other opportunity that he did not get the ball, or the ball was coming to him and he didn't catch it, but it was high.
Yes, I remember that one. Yeah, down near the goal line.
We're due for a break. Let's. You watched the tape today, right?
Yes.
All right. So let's come back and pepper him with thoughts on guys what he saw on the tape. All right. We continue with Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV. Right after this.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Swiss Tech Watches. Swiss Tech Watches are available exclusively at Espling Jewelers. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, Sexton, Loggeman, Catchman, Fortunato. We'll take your calls coming up in a little while, but before the break, we mentioned that Jeff had watched the tape. So let's throw some names at him and see what he thought about the way.
What side of the ball you want to start on?
Well, why don't we start on the defensive side
of
the ball? Because I want to ask you, Gene Smith was just in here working on an interview that's going to air in the pregame show on Saturday night, and his eyes lit up about Terrence Knighton. Oh. So what did you see from number 96?
They lit up for good reason. This guy, remember at the end of OTAs, I was kind of skeptical on the draft pick, and I didn't think that he had a great finish, didn't have great work ethic. Well, the guy comes back in training camp, I'm like, whoa, where'd this guy come from? But then once he put pads on, this guy has shown, particularly on Monday night against the Dolphins, that he can absolutely dominate an offensive lineman. When I'm talking dominate, I'm talking dominate in the sense that when John and Marcus were at their best, he showed moments like that Monday night.
Wow.
Incredibly big, incredibly strong, more athletic than John Henderson, and maybe just as athletic as Marcus Stroud, but bigger and stronger than Marcus, because Marcus was kind of a quick run guy. And John was just a big, powerful guy. Well, you kind of put the two of them together, and that's kind of what Terrence Knighton looked like at times. I mean, the guy was dominant. There was two plays that really stood out in my mind. One of them where he got his hands inside, the ball's coming at him, he throws the offensive lineman aside and makes the tackle, bang, plays dead. Another one on the short yard situation where they didn't get the first down, he stuffed it. He was the reason that started. And he can pass rush. This guy's for real now.
Let's stay on the defensive side real quick then.
I'll just finish that with Terrence Knighton. The two best draft picks that the Jaguars have right now, Eugene Monroe, and this is after game evaluation, Eugene Monroe and Terrence Knight.
And I want to get to Monroe, but real quick, since we're staying with it, if you'll permit me, mm-hmm. Atiyah Ellison was a guy that we talked about a lot last week. How did he play based on the
tape? I thought he was solid. He didn't jump out or jump off the tape as a lot of people might want to talk about. But he was good. He was solid. He was strong at the point. But other than that, you know, he wasn't one of those guys that jumped out in a negative way or a positive way, but just, I think, a good, solid performance. And about what you would want to see from a guy who's expected to have to contribute.
You know, everybody, you draft a guy from Temple and everyone wrinkles their nose. You draft a guy from William & Mary and everybody wrinkles their nose. They want the guys from USC and Florida and Ohio State. But Rasheem Mathis isn't from USC, and Terrence Knighton is from Temple, and Derek Cox is from William & Mary. And I know he was injured, but when he has played, he has been spectacular in this camp. And it just reinforces that old axiom: you find football players where you find football players. You don't find them in a particular place. You find them wherever they are. If they're at Temple, you find him at Temple. If they're at Bethune-Cookman, you find him at Bethune-Cookman. And when I go back to draft day, and in the third round, the Jaguars take a guy from Temple and a guy from William & Mary, and the fan base collectively went, ugh. And right now, you're saying that one of those guys is one of the two best draft picks they made. And I promise you, when that other guy gets on the field,
he'll be there too.
He'll be with him.
Yeah, I think he's going to be there.
How about a couple of the other guys on the defensive side? And let's go with Harvey and Groves, two guys who have been under pretty good scrutiny.
I thought
since
it was
the OTAs
a
began.
Real solid performance for the both of them, considering that I think some people were skeptical about whether they were going to live up to their draft level. I thought Derek Harvey, the only thing that I didn't like about the evaluation or my watching Derek Harvey was when they went to that 3-4, which is they did it early on, and Clint Ingram was one outside backer and Derek Harvey was the other. There was two or three plays, and this drives Vic nuts. There were two or three plays in which Derek Harvey dropped off into coverage, and so he didn't get a one-on-one pass rush opportunity against Jake Long, which is what you really would like to see. But I'm okay with that because I wanted to see also his athleticism, but I would rather have seen the pass rush opportunity against Jake Long. There were a couple plays that stuck out in my mind from Derek Harvey because he whooped Jake Long in a running game. I mean, whooped him. And then Derek Harvey beat Jake Long one time in pass protection quite easily. So I think a real solid night for the two top picks from last year.
And how about a couple of other names that we've heard? Julius Williams, the undrafted rookie from UConn, and Russell Allen, the kid from San Diego State who played a lot early.
Not bad. You know, Allen was pretty good, and he had to play early because Justin Durant had the injury. And I think Russell Allen had to play 50 plays because he played in the middle for Justin Durant, and then later in the game he was at the weak side, and so he got a lot of snaps. And I thought he was very productive. The guy, no question, has athletic ability. He's got ability to where you say, this guy's going to make our football team somewhere. So he's going to make it.
And Julius Williams didn't do anything for you?
I mean, just kind of, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it wasn't to the point where, remember a couple of years ago or maybe even last year, and I've been saying it this year too, where I say that when the lights come on, some just fade. And James Weiss has been one of those guys for me. Every time the lights come on, he fades. Well, this year the lights came on and he faded. Well, I wanted to see bigger things out of Julius Williams because Julius Williams had a lot of play time. And he did it as a stand-up, as an outside backer, and a 3-4. He had his hand down as a defensive end. But there was really no flash.
You know, there are some people who, when you put them in an OTA's practice situation, they get bored. They're just people who don't like to run. You know, they think about going out to practice, and they go, oh, man, all day, run around. I'm 330 pounds. God didn't make me to run, and now I got to go out there in this horrible Florida heat and run around, you know, as though you know, I'm Roger Bannister, and that's a Terrence Knighton. He's just not a run around kind of guy. Guys like that aren't going to show you what they can do until the pads go on, and you put them in a short area where they can bang.
Yeah, and with Julius Williams, you know, big strong guy, you know that. Did what at the combine or wherever he did it at? He did the 225 bench press thing, and he did it 8,000 times. And he looks incredibly strong. And so when you see him with the pads on, and you see him practice doing pretty well, and you expect to see him in the game do well, and I don't want to say it was bad because it wasn't bad. But it just, there wasn't a lot of flash. And I wanted to see just, I'm not, you know, when I'm talking flash, I don't need to see 10 plays. Mm-hmm. If the guy has 30 plays, give me one play mm-hmm. that makes me go, ooh, that was nice. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have one of those plays.
How about a couple guys on the offensive side? You mentioned Eugene Monroe. He played, what, 11 snaps, and you can say
stud.
That already?
Put him in the lineup already? Right now. It's, really? It's, I mean, this is over.
Why? What did you see?
I mean, you just sit there and you watch Eugene Monroe. And he only played 11 plays. You know, so, I mean, this is an 11-play evaluation, so it's not the end-all, be-all. Great balance, incredible strength, really great kicks.
Sinks his hips.
There's nothing that he can't do. They try to bull rush him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't try to lower his head and take on the bull rush at a lower level. He catches it, sinks his hips, and stops it.
Boy, is he good at sinking his hips. I mean, he can drop
really
his load in a split second.
I mean, you might as well go ahead and put him in the starting lineup. He's going to be their opening day. You can't keep a talent like that off of the field on opening day. And, you know, I didn't say that early on because you always want to see somebody first. And, yes, it's only 11 plays, but, yes, we've watched him in OTAs. He has been great. And he's their best offensive lineman right now. And he just got, what, 3 days of practice and 11 plays in a preseason game. And in that preseason game, he was head and shoulders their best offensive lineman.
Were Williamson and Hughes as good as you thought when you watched him? And what about the other young receivers?
Williamson, I think, was real solid. I think Hughes made, three catches, I think, in the game. Nate Hughes had three.
No, Hughes was two and Williamson was three.
No.
Four and three.
Yeah. Nate Hughes had three, and two of the catches that he had were simply fantastic. I mean, this guy right now is one of the two best receivers that they have in camp. And I think you could argue who the other one is.
Well, Williamson and Hughes have been the standout receivers through camp. In Todd Monken's evaluation, he was the guy who first brought Williamson to my attention. I would have never guessed Williamson. I'm sitting the day of the scrimmage, I'm having late lunch with Todd Monken, and I said, he's a wide receivers coach, and I said, okay, tell me about your wide receivers. He said, well, we got the two guys have just stood above everybody else. And I said, who are they? And I expected to hear Nate Hughes, and which I did. And then I heard Troy Williamson, and I caught me by surprise. I had him going. I had him in a body bag. He was out of here. And boy, is he not out of here.
He's got to stay healthy.
Yeah, well, there's no question.
Got to stay healthy. I mean, that's I think, you know, he's shown that he can be consistent, but he's got to stay healthy. But that obviously brings up the next question. Why is Torrey Holt not in the discussion as one of the two best receivers?
Well, because they're being smart with him, quote unquote. Okay. I mean, you know, they're limiting his use in they're limiting his practice time. Now, I know what that wry smile is. There is a faction who wonder what he has left.
I wonder.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. Now, if you're a veteran receiver, you know, you don't want them to know you don't have much left. If you know you don't have much left, you're going to try to, you know, hide it. You're going to try to limit your. So maybe you got that going. Maybe you don't have that going. But I know what else you don't have going. You don't have Jerry Porter going here.
No.
This ain't Jerry Porter.
This is
a good guy who's going to give you everything he has.
But I still think, you know, the big question on Torrey Holt is can he run? You know, can he run to the level that he has ran to put up the Hall of Fame type numbers?
Probably not.
And probably not
probably
as good,
not.
But is it going to be good enough?
That's what we don't know.
You know, and I don't know if we will know until we get to the regular season.
All right, time for news here at the bottom of the hour. We'll continue 90 more minutes of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna and fueled by the folks at the Burrito Gallery. Stop by and see them over 21 East Adams Street. Back after news.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Moving right along, fans. Nobody helps you get ready for game day Saturday night better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Brian Sexton, along with Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman, the senior editor of Jaguars.com, is here. As is Joe Fortunato, and you can join us. 355-NFL-1. Are you? Turn your mic on.
Hi, Brian.
What do you have to say?
Nothing. There are three of you in here, and only one of me.
Don't ever forget that.
Only one of Hey Joe. When we're talking about some of the individual performances in the Monday night's preseason game, Vic, of all the players that we have kind of, I don't want to say built up expectations for, but have started to develop expectations for, who disappointed you?
Well, I'm not going to say Rashad Jennings. I think that's where you're leading me. You know,
you take it wherever you want.
Well,
we've talked a lot about
he's
him.
He's a guy we really hyped in OTAs. But this is a rookie from Liberty. Let's let him get his feet on the ground. Blah, 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 blah. Now, having said that, I want to go somewhere else.
Okay.
Oh, you know where I'm going, too.
I'm ready.
Josh Vaughn, the Richmond Spider.
Mm-hmm.
I've done this guy really intrigues me. I thought he looked good on Monday. I thought he was the flip side. He's looked good in practice, so I've done some homework on this guy. And I had seen him last year against Northern Iowa in the playoffs, and he looked
great.
He's
a national champion.
Absolutely. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Josh Vaughn. First of all, he rushed for 1,900 yards last year for the national champion Richmond Spiders. All right, he rushed for 1,900 yards. Rashad Jennings rushed for 1,500 for Liberty. All right? Josh Vaughn's a fifth-round pick. You know, Rashad Jennings is a seventh-round pick. The expectation here for Josh Vaughn should be equally high based on what I've seen. Gene Smith got a steal. They grabbed this guy when Tampa made a procedural mistake. They wanted to get a receiver. They were down in receivers. And I don't know why teams get all screwed up with numbers, you know, training camp numbers, and it doesn't make any sense.
Well, they got screwed up with numbers for a game.
For a game, and they were just got 11 receivers their roster.
They got a million receivers,
yes.
but there's a bunch of them that supposedly did not play whatever.
Okay, so they had injury at the position, and they needed another receiver, so they cut Josh Vaughn, and then they were going to bring...
They said, don't leave town. We're going to sign you right back.
We're going to bring him right back, except Josh Vaughn's... his agent is Eugene Monroe's agent. So, I mean,
And obviously identified that this team here in Jacksonville has a greater need for running back than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So when the Jaguars, claimed him, it was a natural. And the Jaguars did their homework. Gene Smith did his homework. He knew about this guy, and when the telex or whatever they use nowadays, the wire came, when it came across the wire that the guy had been cut, he put in a claim with the idea that this is too good of a talent to just let go across your desk and not give your full attention. And I'm telling you, he's right. If that was his thinking, and I'm sure it was, he is absolutely right. Josh Vaughn has a chance to be a real player for this team. Based on his college performance and based on where he was drafted and based on what I've seen of him, the expectations for him should be every bit as high as they are for Rashad Jennings. 1,900 yards rushing is impressive in any division, and Richmond is at the absolute top. 19 receptions. He can't catch it. He's not Velcro. But he can't catch it. Mm-hmm. 19 catches.
Scored 20 touchdowns.
Okay. That's the top of – is that 1AA? What is that division?
I thought it was Division 2, but I could be
No,
wrong.
It's not Division 2.
Oh, they call it football championship.
1AA.
1AA?
Isn't that 1AA?
It's the next one down. It's the next one down.
That's 1AA. They call it the
Bowl subdivision.
Yeah, whatever that means.
All right. Whatever. It's the next one down. It's okay. Real, real good. It's a division that has – turned out a lot of good players, including Brad Meester right here.
Yeah, Northern Iowa.
So you like him. But anybody else that you were disappointed in that maybe you expected more out of?
Okay.
In my mind, Rashad Jennings was that. And I'm not going to just totally just say, okay, I've given up on this guy or anything like that. I'm just saying is that I expected to see a little more out of him. I expected to see a little more out of Rashad
Jennings. Well, Tony Pashos had a bad game, right?
He had one bad play.
Well, then I don't know. I mean, I just assumed that – this furor to chase Tony out of here by the fans, which is based on the false start penalties, right?
Well, he had a false start. No, he had a false start penalty, and which he's trying to get a jump, and for good reason, because I think it was on the next play,
Cameron Wake,
the Mr. The Canadian CFL football, superstar, came right around him and got the sack. But that was his only bad play, that and the false start.
Yeah, I can't say that I'm disappointed in anyone, really. I mean, it was just a scrimmage, and it was part of the process. Now, I will tell you this. I'm not trying
sound
to...
Sound like a coach there.
Yeah, I know. It is part of this process that is building for the third preseason game.
Vic Ketchman, coach speak.
That's the one. The third preseason game. When we do our show after the third preseason game, I think that's when you can start cutting the team.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this, because I pull up Jacksonville.com. And there's a reference in there about something unethical or something that Gene Smith had done. But yet the source came from a Cleveland newspaper. How does that work?
Well, let me give you the nuts and bolts of this. I got a call from Tony Grossi of the Cleveland Plain Dealer last week while asking about Don Carey. And I knew right away.
He's the guy who
wrote the story.
Don Carey. The cornerback that the Jaguars claimed because the Cleveland Browns waived him injured.
Right.
And then the Jaguars claimed him.
Okay. Now, so I get a call from Tony Grossi, and he's asking about Don Carey. And right away, I know it's a witch hunt. So I said to Tony, hey, Tony, who are you trying to screw here? The Jaguars or the Browns? Because I ain't going to participate in it if you're trying to screw the Jaguars. Well, it wasn't the Jaguars trying to screw. This is a guy who did the Browns not cause him to be taken off the beat some years ago. I mean, he has reason to stick.
So he's sharpening his axe.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And the Browns got some things going on. Dante Stallworth is bad for their image.
They've had suits filed by former players for staff.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, I knew right away something was going on, and then, of course, this little thing breaks about a Browns official, complaining that what Gene Smith did in claiming Don Carey off the waived injured list is claimed off waivers when, in fact, he had injured attached to his waiver is unethical. Well, this is my 38th or 39th year. 38. This is my 38th season. I have never heard of this unwritten rule, and I know of other unwritten rules. There used to be an unwritten rule that you don't claim off waivers guys in your own division. All right. Then Coughlin broke that rule, and he almost got Keenan McCardell killed as a result of it. You might remember that one,
Greg Lloyd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was an ordered hit.
Really?
Oh, that was the Jimmy Miller. That was the Jimmy Miller claim.
97.
And cut. They cut him the day after they played him. Remember that?
Yep.
Almost got Keenan killed. Anyhow, now everybody does it. That unwritten rule has been broken. I know of no such unwritten rule about claiming guys are waived injured. In fact, it is widely considered that when you claim a player who is waived injured, you are doing a favor for the team that is trying to waive him, trying to get rid of him, because you see,
you don't have responsibility to pay him anymore.
They don't. Yeah. You see, if that guy is claimed, the injury liability is transferred to the claiming team. If that guy clears waivers, he has to go, because he's injured, he's waived injured, he has to go back to the team that cut him, and then they have to either put him on injury reserve or negotiate an injury settlement with him. All right? In this case, they wanted him to come back so they can put him on injured reserve. Well, they should have called everybody and told him what they wanted to do. Maybe the Jaguars would have played ball with
him. Well,
let me ask
you this. They'd
have been up front with him.
Could they have just put him on injured reserve?
It would have cost them one stinking roster position instead of...
Through training camp.
Until
the 53. So they didn't do that just because they wanted to save a roster spot.
They did it just because they wanted to stay at 80 and not drop to 79.
Now let me ask you this.
They probably got six long snappers in camp.
Who attributed the claim of unethicalness, because in our paper it said that a source at the Cleveland newspaper said that there was or was claiming
was
that
Gene Smith
did unethical. So, I mean, to me, where's your story?
Well, there
was no story, right?
Well, it's profootballtalk.com, Jeff. I mean, they deal in, okay. they deal in these, you know, type of subjects.
But I just kept waiting to find something that a Browns official said or an unnamed Cleveland Browns person said.
Somebody said something.
Nowhere.
Somebody in the Browns organization said something to Tony Grossi that would hopefully not for it to get back to the Jaguars or get to anyone. They just wanted to quiet down Tony Grossi. What they wanted to do was say, hey, you know, we're not guilty on this because that's unethical, with the idea that Tony Grossi would accept that excuse and not write anything, not say anything.
And not hammer the Browns
and
for losing
and
the guy.
I got you.
Now I got it.
We're due for a break.
So Gene Smith needs to take that accusation, put it as a feather in his cap, and says, hey, I'm doing my job.
They deserve to be burned because it's a screw-up. It's a screw-up. And then the other side of this is, when are the Jaguars? Oh, the last game of the year?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have some flavor now. That's good for Vic.
Time for a break. And if it's good for Vic, folks, it's good for Vic. Back after this.
Talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic. Dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
This portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Best Buy. Remember to stop by the brand new Best Buy over in the St. John's Town Center. To the phone lines with the last seven.
Hold on. I got to correct an error I made.
Yes.
Josh Vaughn was not a fifth-round pick. We checked it. He's undrafted. He was undrafted and signed by the Tampa Bay Bucks. But he is a 6-foot, 235-pound guy, and he did rush for almost 1,900 yards at Richmond.
And 20 touchdowns last year.
Yeah.
355, NFL-1. We've got Chris down the road in Lakeland. Hello, Chris.
Oh, hey, guys. Wasn't able to listen to the game on Monday night. Family stuff going on. I tried to check Vic's blog to see what was going on. We got a battle going on with the punters, and it was a low-scoring game, so I just wanted to get your impressions on what you saw with the punters, please.
Pottlish had one bomb, 57 yards. He had a couple. His first punt was a duck, and then the bomb. And
Pottlish had the most good. Pottlish had the most opportunities, but he had a very good night.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
That was kind of his night, you know, to shine because he got the more opportunities. Now I would expect that Steve Weatherford this week will be the guy, and mm-hmm. he'll get the majority of the punts, and then Pottlish may get one like what you had happen on Monday night. And I'm trying to find the numbers of up, but.
Weatherford's punt out of the end zone was...
Weatherford's punt was fantastic. Here they are. No, that's the Buccaneers. Here we go. 2009 preseason punting. Pottlish 3 for 133. His average was 44.3 with a net of 44, which would lead the league.
Right.
With at that net. Weatherford's one punt was 52 yards. And the longest that Pottlish had was 54. Mm-hmm. So
it's a good battle.
It's a great battle, and I think it's going to last all the way through preseason. You know, the question I think becomes is who's going to be consistent, and I think that Weatherford showed when he was punting last year that he has the ability to have more consistency than what Pottlish did. Now, remember, you had Joe D. Camillus. Joe D. was a big fan of that directional punting,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that Russ Purnell does the directional
punting. He said he never had it. Hunter Smith is not a directional punter. He never had it in Indianapolis.
So did that hinder Adam Pottlish? I don't know. You know, was
but isn't
Weatherford
that why they drafted him? Because he was able to
be
the
best directional punter in the draft. That was Gene Smith's quote.
Yeah.
There were two punters in that draft. They were draft back-to-back.
Sepulveda
by Pittsburgh was second, right? Yeah. Pottlish was taken ahead,
right.
Was taken first in the fourth round, and then Pittsburgh came back with Sepulveda. Sepulveda is the bomber, and Pottlish was the directional punter.
It'll be interesting to watch how that battle goes, that and the long snapping battle.
Maybe they can trade one of those punters.
I think that'd be tough.
It'll be tough.
I think that'd be tough. You'd have to have somebody in a real pinch. Because you know teams know you're going to end up releasing one of them anyway. You're not going to carry two.
What, does Cleveland have a punter?
The intrigue begins. All right, to the phone lines again. Mike is on his mobile phone.
You're stirring it up, aren't you?
Sure is. Hello, Mike.
How'd you like to call?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
I was just calling. I wanted to just thank Vic for having our annual golf tournament that's coming up Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pretty angry after the game on Monday, and I'm really looking forward to that, hoping to turn my week around.
Why are you angry?
Vic loves playing golf with angry people, so you're going to have fun.
I just was mad with the outcome. I know it's just the preseason, but I still was just kind of, you know, waited to get out of work that day to get home and watch my Jags play and just –
Hey, good luck on Friday.
Kind of disappointed in it,
Hey, Mike, take that with a grain of salt, and I can assure you that the physical battle was fairly even. It wasn't slanted one way or the other. You know how sometimes after you first watch something, you're like, "Gosh, that was terrible,"
mm-hmm.
and then maybe you go back and you analyze it and you go, "You know what? It was bad. Wasn't as bad as I thought."
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you saw something you thought that was really good, and your mm-hmm. initial reaction, God, that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And you go back and you look at it, and you go, yeah, probably not as good as I thought. I think that was one of them games where maybe your first reaction is, boy, David, and, you know, first-team offense didn't do much. Boy, this wasn't a very good night. Really, it was a terrible night. And that seemed to be the reaction of some of the people that write. I don't know if you were part of that.
Oh, the damn media. I hate them. I hate them. Stinking media.
But, you know, it. To me, I didn't think it was bad. Was it great? No, I just thought it was okay.
You talking about the writing now. The writing was just okay.
Vic's writing is always fantastic.
It's because I'm, a positive guy. It's that damn crap negative. It's that crap Delingo. Negative other media reporters.
Hey, real quick.
I got a funny story to tell you about the most important play in that game, by the way.
Well, we got 90 seconds. Can you tell it?
Yeah.
All right.
Fourth down play. Paul Smith leads his team out of the huddle. This is it. Game's on the line. For the remaining 4,113 fans are howling. All of a sudden, my right front pocket starts to vibrate. My phone. Oh, who's calling? Pull it out. It's my wife. Right?
Doesn't she know?
It's bedtime. And she wants to know if I'm coming home tonight or not. Because if I'm not coming home, then she's going to set the alarm. She's going to turn the alarm on. Ball is snapped. I got to give an answer now. The ball is snapped. The crowd is howling. It's going to be decided right here. And I got to blog this. So I said, go ahead. You know, turn it on. Close the thing and put it back in my pocket. Incomplete. And at that moment, two things were decided.
You weren't going home.
I was going to sleep on the floor of my office, and the Jaguars were going to lose.
So really, who's the caller? Mike, you shouldn't be angry. Vic's the one that should be angry.
Yeah,
at Bonnie
me.
For calling,
folks,
and for the Jaguars for losing.
Vic will be angry enough for just about everybody.
She doesn't know. She doesn't know when she called.
Okay.
Huh?
That's okay.
Yeah.
Does she know what you do?
She, you know what she actually asked me? Listen to this question. No, she doesn't. Listen to this question. This is the best. She said to me yesterday when I finally got home, seriously, she said, why didn't they let the fans go to the game on Monday?
And with that, folks, we'll take a break for news here at the top of the hour. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio. WOKV, depend on it.
This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio, WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And welcome to hour number two of Jaguars This Week here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Sexton, Loggeman, Catchman, Fortunato, you as well, and we will get to the phone lines. Real quick, though, want to point out a story that probably will go unnoticed, or at least won't get a lot of attention by most NFL fans, but it does hold some importance, and I'm going to ask your comment on this. Today, the NFL and NBC extended their contract for Sunday Night Football by 2 years
mm-hmm.
to cover 2013. And most fans go, all right. I mean, they've just been used to contracts being extended, but this is setting up for a lockout in 2011.
Yeah, well, that's...
The owners, it's a war chest for the owners. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You don't have to ask. That's exact. You got it right on the nose. What they have, what they're doing here is, this is money that's going to be paid in 2011. Whether there's a season or there isn't a season, though I'm sure it'll be scaled back.
One way or the other.
But this is what they're doing.
Yeah, see, I'm kind of confused on that. I mean, why would a network agree to pay if there's no product?
Well, they're getting a break on the other end. There's obviously, for it's almost like getting float money. You know, we'll give you a sweetheart deal.
On the back end.
Exactly.
But, I mean, is that part of the package?
This is the most popular sport league on the face of the earth, and even as expensive as it is, there's nothing like it. Man, the TVs, they just... You know, I can remember when I was a kid, when Pete Rozelle introduced this the TV deal by which we live today, still, you know, meaning these networks move it to several different networks, and, you know, 1 o'clock game, 4 o'clock game, and you know the rest.
Sure.
A lot more on TV, and up until that time, the teams owned their own rights.
Sports Blackout Act of 61 changed that.
Right. The Rams had their own TV network.
The Redskins had their own TV, the DuPont network.
Yeah, and the Steelers and Colts were on, had their own deal, had their own network deal. The Rams was with Admiral. There was an Admiral TV that made TVs. They had a network. They owned a network or something like that.
Right.
All the teams had their own deals. Pete Rozelle brought the whole league together to share the wealth, you know, pool the revenue. The whole concept was everyone participates. And the great line was the Rams owner, Dan Reeves, said to one of the other owners, "You mean next year when I come to play you, you're not going to let me in your ballpark to telecast?" And he said, "That's right. Don't bring your TV people," because this was, in other words, one network was going to show this league, and the other network was going to, after the merger, was going to show the other league. All right. The back then, there were so many games. There was such an explosion of games on TV. The common line was, they're going to overexpose it. They're going to overexpose it. They're going to, here it is, 45, almost 50 years later, you cannot overexpose.
No.
Vic, you cannot overexpose the National Football League. The more you give them, the more they want. You can give it to them on Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, Monday night, Thursday.
I'll watch it.
Saturday.
That's the way I am.
So NBC took advantage of the opportunity to help the league, the owners, and in exchange got considerations through the end of the labor agreement as it exists today.
Now, I remember when Roger Goodell came on board. And Vic, you kind of weren't a big fan of his.
No, I was not a fan of one thing. This is his CBA plan. This isn't Tagliabue's. He put this together and gave it to Tagliabue to sell so Tags could get out of Dodge. All right? Roger Goodell has got to take the responsibility and the culpability for this mess of a CBA plan by which the league is now living, and which is going to result in probably a work stoppage in 2011. This is on Roger Goodell's butt.
You don't think it'll get resolved before then?
It could.
I mean, because all the positioning is going on now. I mean, everything that's talked about
now,
it's going to happen. It's coming. Yeah, he's been telling the players here how to prepare for, you know, the lockout.
Tagliabue wanted out, and Goodell wanted in, and this whole thing was rushed. This is a mess. Why these captains of industry, why these owners with these fantastic CFOs would approve this, I can't imagine. And I'm sure they're now saying to themselves, I can't imagine why we did it either.
They're all towing the company line
right
now. They're all saying we're not happy.
But they had always put their trust in Paul Tagliabue.
Always.
They did it one more time, and what he did was he sold them Roger Goodell's plan, not his.
All right, so just in case you see the headline on your favorite website or in the newspaper, understand that it's more than just a regular, every year, commonplace extension of the contract. It's a means with which the owners can survive in case of a lockout.
Boy, the owners have done some really smart things, Jeff. Your players' union is facing a very formidable foe here.
No doubt.
They spiked those contracts in 2011. They spiked those contracts. Guys, when they fail to reach a new agreement, they will be creating a work stoppage that will cost them the largest salary of their career in many cases.
It could hurt.
355-NFL-1. You know what? On that note, let's take a quick break here, get it out of the way. We'll come back, go right to the phone lines. We've got Dave and John, Colton,
and
James. We'll go to all of you when we return to Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Jaguars fans, vote for your favorite teacher to be the Community First Credit Union Teacher of the Week. Your teacher can win club seats to a Jaguars home game. All part of First Down, Touchdown Teachers. Visit CommunityFirstFL.org for the details. Just got a quick text message from Jeff Whitson, the general manager of Fox and CBS here in town, and he tells me that both of those networks have already renewed their deals with the NFL. So the NFL now goes into the last year of the CBA, and then 2011, having extended deals through 2013 with Fox, CBS, and NBC.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about the status of ESPN, but I would guess if it's not done already, it's on the way.
It's real simple. Here you go, players. This is what you're missing. This is what you're not going to get. We got this deal, and you'd get X number of dollars from this, and you'd get part of this and part of this, you know. But you know, I guess if you don't give us a new CBA, you're not going to get anything.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. And then when you're talking about the NFL, it's a lot different than any other sport because the career span is so short.
The carrot the owners are dangling is the largest carrot in the history of the world. We're talking about a gigantic carrot. That's their strategy. Their strategy is to show them a slice of pie on which the entire union can get horribly fat.
Take some phone calls?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right, let's do it. 355-NFL-1. Colton's been holding out in Denver the longest. Hello, Colton. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Yeah, I'm in Denver, so I don't get to talk a lot of Jaguars football with anyone. So I have a few questions for you, actually. First of all, I was wondering what you guys think of the two offensive tackle battles, first of all, Tony Patras and Evan Britton, and then Trey Thomas and Eugene Monroe. I mean, the Miami game, it just looked to me like Tony Patras was not doing very well, and Eugene Monroe seemed to pretty much just abuse everyone who even attempted to come his way. So I'm thinking it's going to be tough to keep him out of the left tackle spot. But also, and my other question is, what do you guys think if the Vikings were to release Tavares Jackson? Would he be something the Jaguars may want to pursue as we kind of are looking for a backup quarterback?
All right, Colton, I'll answer the first questions, and I'll let Vic answer the question about quarterbacks. With the offensive tackles, Eugene Monroe is the real deal. I expect him to be a starter on opening day over Trey Thomas. He looks that good. At right tackle, Evan Britton, and I said this earlier, I didn't think that Tony Patras had a bad game. He had one bad play in which he was beat around the corner for a sack. I think other than that play, he was okay, and then also the false start. Other than that, he was just fine. I think Evan Britton is a guy that's going to need some time. How much time that is, I don't know. Is it going to be end of the season, or is it going to be in year two? I don't know. He is definitely the tackle of the future. He has more athletic ability than Tony. He's got a great work ethic. He's got great attitude and a little nasty attitude at that. Now, the quarterback question, Vic, there you go.
Well, I can't tell you for sure whether they would have interest in Tavares Jackson or not. But my gut instinct, because I haven't asked anybody, and they wouldn't tell anyhow. But my gut instinct would be to say no. And the reason is that Tavares Jackson is a guy who I think wants to be a he wants to be a starter, but that wouldn't be the interest. The reason they're not, the reason they probably wouldn't be interested in him is because he's not very good.
Let me just kind of say
he's
this:
he's not very good.
They may not be interested in him, but if a quarterback becomes available,
they will absolutely
have interest in that position.
Now let me direct your attention in some other directions. What if Sage Rosenfels came free in Minnesota. Now, there's a guy. He's in Minnesota, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, there's a guy who fits the description of a backup quarterback because it's all he's really ever been, but he's gotten extensive playing time. And he's young enough. Yeah. He's young enough to put a little fire, you know, under your starting quarterback's
seat.
Okay. Another guy, Leinart, Matt Leinart in Arizona. He's in a head-to-head battle with Brian St. Pierre. Until the game last Thursday, St. Pierre was said to be winning that battle. I thought Leinart outplayed St. Pierre.
He did.
Yeah, but you know. If something was to happen there Ken Wisenhunt said, you know, I've had enough of the Leinart distraction, because it was a distraction for them last year. I don't like him. He's not my guy. I didn't draft him. Wisenhunt did not draft him,
no.
Right? He's not my guy. I didn't draft him. I don't want him. I'm getting him out of here because we're going to go in another direction anyhow when Warner retires, which is probably what they would do. All of a sudden, Matt Leinart might become available. And by the way, The guaranteed money that was paid to him has already been paid. Mm-hmm. It's on Arizona's books. You're getting a guy at a great age, if you like him, and with a pretty favorable contract. So, you know, I think if everyone is just patient here, I think you're going to have guys. I think you're going to have guys come free. I think you're going to have some people of interest. Let's see, where else could we turn?
I think they should have went and got Brett Favre. I mean, they're going to the Super Bowl now.
Well, they're certainly selling tickets, though, aren't they?
Sage Rosenfels is a guy who would really interest
Brett Favre.
Who would really interest
Brett
me.
Favre.
It would really interest me. And what's the deal with the Jets now with Kellen Clemens?
Well, I mean, if he's any good, don't you want him as your backup behind?
Yeah, they're not going to let him go. I mean, okay. Sanchez is going to be their guy, but
yeah,
they're not going to let
a rookie,
him go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've given you two names, Sage Rosenfels and Matt Leinart. One more name's Brian St. Pierre. If Leinart wins that job, Brian St. Pierre is a journeyman. He'd be a good candidate for number two. And, of course, what you'd have to ask yourself then is Todd Bauman better than Brian St. Pierre?
Because it doesn't really matter. And my question, which I don't know the answer to, but a question that just kind of is sitting in my mind, is this team planning on going into the season with two quarterbacks on
yes.
the active roster
yes.
once again?
Yes. Jack, I think...
I mean, right now they are.
I think Jack, frankly, I think he told me. I don't know if it was in a press conference or what, but that's his plan. I think he wants and want a guy in a practice squad.
I mean, right now, but if all of a sudden you know you get a Matt Leinart and he doesn't know the system, you got to have somebody that knows the system to be able to be back up in game one.
What about the situation in Philadelphia if Mike Vick's going to be the number two quarterback? What about Kevin Cobb? Does he stay on the roster there?
No, they're
I think
not
so.
Letting go of him. They love him.
Yeah, I think he stays.
He's been hurt.
But, you know, one of the things we have to consider here is this team will almost certainly put itself in position next spring to draft a quarterback. I can't imagine that it'll go through another draft without drafting a guy. Somehow, some way, they've got to get into position. Hey, I've been beating this drum for a long time. They should have took Brady Quinn. I mean, I'm just going to stand on that one because it's just too important of a position to get caught with your pants down.
How about one of those guys
down.
Becoming available from Cleveland?
Well, Anderson or Brady Quinn, and if someone came available, it would be Derek Anderson. And
but wouldn't he
they
be
paid
trade?
A ton of money to him. I mean, you know, oh, yeah, Cleveland would just love to do you a favor. we could call Tony on that one. Maybe he could arrange that.
How about Tampa Bay? Okay, Tampa Bay.
Josh Johnson.
You know, Josh Johnson and Luke McCown could become available.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because if Byron Leftwich beats him out, don't you think their number two would be their first-round pick?
But remember, what you think you're going to do next spring plays into this because you don't want to bring in somebody who doesn't fit with that kind of an arrangement.
Right. So we're just all down on Paul Smith.
Well, Paul Smith's not a roster player. He's a practice squad guy. Now, let's get the Paul Smith thing straight. This is a really good guy.
Very good guy.
Bright guy, son of a coach. He's just everything you would want until he has to throw the ball. There's just not enough arm there to go beyond 20 yards or so in the middle of the field. And there's a big limit. There's a big restriction there. Maybe you'll get a growth spurt. Maybe something will happen, you know, and I don't know. Maybe his arm will get stronger. I'm reaching here. Because he's
trying to give the guy.
Because he's a great guy. He's a great guy. But he doesn't have the arm.
Put the line, maybe he'll get a gross spur.
He's a great guy, but he's just not. You're not.
He's not a professional.
You don't want him in the game.
You know what his interception reminded me of? And I'm not trying to be funny here because I don't ever like.
Yes,
to,
you are.
To make no, I'm really not because I don't like to make fun of guys, you know, in their career because if when the dream ends, it's,
right, exactly,
that's tough.
That's right.
But when you watch the Tennessee Titans play on that Hall of Fame game and Mortensen's son threw the interception, the next day he was cut, and the interception that Smith had in this Monday night's game, I mean, it wasn't a whole lot better.
It was. Yeah. There was a quarterback at Tulsa a long time ago named Jerry Rome. I mean, a big-time record-setting first round draft pick type of quarterback. Big time. Arm, the whole bit. Paul Smith broke all his records at Tulsa. Shattered them. I mean, Paul Smith, if you want to know why the Graham Harrells of the world don't get drafted in this league, you know, Paul Smith, here's the example right here. Paul Smith set every freaking record you could set at Tulsa. And he is a fantastic person, the son of a coach, knows football inside and out. His instincts are out of this world. But you see him on the field. He's smaller than the other guys.
There's a quarterback out there next year, though.
I was just trying not to go.
Oh, man.
When you said that,
that's
I was just
right.
Thinking, how am I going to stop from saying this?
Did you read the Tebow plan today? I got a new plan.
All right, let's hear it.
You've been way too cheery today.
We got 2 minutes. We got 2 minutes before we break the news.
I've got a stack of contracts in my office.
Oh, wow. So now you're the ticket guy.
Ticket contracts. 3-year commitment. You sign this, the Jaguars guarantee they will draft Tim Tebow. If they don't, the deal's off. You're free. But if they draft him, you got to fork up the money. Provided that these contracts lead to a sold-out stadium on a season ticket basis, you know. In other words, you want him, you got him, but you
got to
buy the tickets. Right? So if you want one of those contracts, you just give me a call. I'll send one out. I got one guy to ask Vic today.
No,
send me the contract. That's it.
One.
Only one person said send me a contract.
You get hundreds of emails a day.
Oh, I got hundreds of emails, but only one guy said send me a contract. I got lots of people commenting on it. Oh, it's a great idea. Yeah, get somebody to buy those.
Oh, you're kidding.
But only one guy said send me a contract.
So that's 14,999 more you need. We'll just leave it at that.
Oh, what a trip.
You know, there's more you can say about this subject. If you look at the quarterbacks, the Matt Ryans, the Joe Flaccos, the guys who are successful in the league coming out of college, are coming out of pro systems. They're coming out of pro systems almost exclusively.
They don't run one in Gainesville, do they?
I'm a believer, man. I'm on board. That guy's a great player.
He's got a strong enough arm. There's no question about that.
And he's a good enough athlete, too.
It's just that when
he's got that
turn,
it,
when it
he's
turns
just got
end
that,
over end
Vic,
sometimes.
He,
that,
no, Vic, he's got that it.
You look him in the eyes, he's a winner. You see it. See, that's the thing, Jeff.
This got you in trouble
you don't
last
understand.
Time. You said it just like Vince Young. That's what got you busted last week. Be careful.
Listen, if you... like I said, Alex Smith. Here's a guy that's not successful. Is that?
Oh, you're digging it.
Is that
hard
no? Is that that's not a pro style system?
No, that's Urban Meyer in Utah.
All right, so but the Matt Ryans and the Joe Flaccos that come out of that
but,
true
you know,
pro
goes,
style
that
system.
That goes to show you, Alex Smith was the first pick of the draft.
Oh God,
boy, and he's been a disappointment.
Oh.
All right, let's take a break on that note. Loggy, putting the ladle in the pot and stirring it up. We can always count on you. The Conrad Dobler of Jaguars this week, folks. We'll take a break. He's enjoying the burrito gallery. You can, too. 21 East Adams Street. Loggy has eaten every burrito he has touched. Back after this.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
When you're looking for department store style and discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 7 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, once you go, you get it.
They got good ties.
Because you wear them all the time.
Yeah. I mean, they really do. They
one
got nice
Saturday.
Nice men's clothing section.
Okay.
Who's that guy from Vanderbilt, the quarterback?
Jay Cutler.
Cutler.
For the
okay.
Bears now.
Hold on. I want to say something here.
What are you doing?
First of all, I want to go on record as saying I'm all for drafting Tim Tebow. And I mean it. I'm serious. If that son of a gun can save this franchise, please, please draft him because my job's attached to it. And it would be good right. for Vic, and I'm all for what's good for Vic.
Absolutely.
Okay?
All right. All right, well, we've got a couple more here. Add Jason Campbell to the list.
Well,
let me just stop with the list right now because the list is so long.
All
right. These are young quarterbacks, and I don't even have Brady on here. I'm going to throw him down too. These are quarterbacks in the league who are the product of pro-style offenses. What are you doing?
It says, there's a note. There's a note on the board that says don't write on the card.
Vic just made his list on the cards that Brian has to read occasionally on the air.
That's okay.
And Joe, he just wrote that today. Vic, aren't you paying attention?
He gave me the thing.
Look right up there. Can you see it?
Yeah. All right. These are quarterbacks who've come out of pro style college offenses. Mark Sanchez, Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco. Carson Palmer, Ben Roethlisberger, both Mannings, Chad Henne, Trent Edwards, Philip Rivers, Matt Castle from USC, Brady Quinn and Derek Anderson, Jay Cutler, Kyle Orton, Tom Brady. I mean, the list goes on and on.
How about Brett Favre? Is he a pro-style guy at Southern Miss?
Oh, it's so old. I mean, that was a single wing.
Aaron Rodgers?
Come on.
Aaron Rodgers, absolutely. Rodgers actually was a system quarterback. He comes out of that Cal system, that Jeff Tedford system. Achilles Smith was a bust in it.
How about the kid in Tampa, their first-round pick?
Josh Freeman?
Freeman's definitely pro-style. All right, so we got enough of these
guys.
Did you
say Matt Ryan? Did you put Matt Ryan
in? I got
Matt
Ryan in
there. Wait a second, real quick. How about Matt Stafford?
Stafford's clearly pro-style. I mean, big-arm guy.
Mark Bulger?
Oh, absolutely.
Matt Leinart?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's another
Drew Brees at Purdue?
Stop.
Sorry, right, I'm trying to help you.
Give me guys... Let's go with the guys who have come out of the wiggle jiggle systems, dink and dunk and fun and gun and run and poop or whatever, you know.
Vince Young, Alex Smith, the one guy that played at Hawaii who the Redskins are absolutely in love with. The quarterback from Hawaii.
Yeah.
Draft pick last
year.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name.
But anyway,
Colt Brennan.
Colt Brennan, that's it.
Mm-hmm. They love him.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, he's not playing.
Hey, Matt Hasselbeck played in a pro set at...
We got enough pro set.
All right, sorry.
Okay, so we got a list here.
Michael Vick.
It's obviously Michael Vick. It's not a pro style. I don't know. Donovan McNabb didn't really run a pro style at Syracuse.
They ran what was called the...
No, that was not a pro style.
I know it wasn't, but what did they call that, Joe? The freeze option. Freeze option, right? At Syracuse? I'm pretty sure it was freeze option.
Wasn't pro style.
It wasn't pro style. Mm-hmm. There's your best example, McNabb. But, I mean, you can see the list is tilted. So what I'm trying to say here is that a guy coming out of something other than a pro style offense, mm-hmm. and I'm all for drafting him now, I said that.
You signed the contracts, ladies and gentlemen.
I can tell by your survey here.
I'm all for it. But nonetheless, he is swimming upstream. He's against the grain.
Based on that list, you are absolutely correct.
Okay.
355, NFL 1. Folks,
here's your cards back if you want them.
Yeah,
now that you've ruined them.
Look, they're the Jags Monday cards, so they're his cards anyway.
You know what we need, Joe? Just some extra
You can
cards
write on your cards.
Don't write on the cards.
From now on, he's going to be looking at the cards.
We going to the phones?
Yeah, let's go to the phones. Let's go to John down the road in Daytona. Hello, John.
Hello, Vic.
Who?
Jeff. Ryan, nice to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you.
I have a question. I was just wondering what the status on Zach Miller was. He didn't look like it was a major injury in the game Monday night, but I've seen conflicting reports about him going to IR and everything.
Well, I'll tell you what Jack Del Rio told the reporters today. He said, I'm not going to give you much in the way of medical information because we're nearing that point of cuts, in a roster intrigue. And, of course, you know, the Browns are just waiting to stick it to the Jaguars. So you got to keep the information.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it appeared from the game Monday night that it was a knee. Mm-hmm. I did not see him out at the practice today, off to the side, you know, or anywhere else.
We got a call about it last night.
He was getting treatment.
I don't know. You know, so, and we don't know that.
We got a call about Zach last night on Jack's radio show, and he didn't act as if it was any big deal. Now, you got to take that in context of what he told you.
Yeah, but he did that with Mike Walker.
Right.
And he's still not on the field.
Right. Well,
I mean, coaches.
In the context of
what
he just
do.
Said.
It's, you know, I'm not saying they lie, but.
Yeah, it's you can't get any accurate medical information in the preseason because they don't have to.
See, that's the thing is when a guy looks you in the eye and warns you, tells you, you know, hey, I'm not going to tell you the truth. Well, then you're an idiot if you ask, right? Why even ask?
Belichick doesn't tell anybody anything, and so the other coaches in the league are now saying, well, if it works for him, it should work for us.
And it's obviously worked for him.
355-NFL-1. Let's go to John in Keystone Heights. Hello, John.
Hey, I want to ask Jeff about Henderson and stuff, but talk about Tebow's. What we could do is just say, you know, you buy the tickets. In advance, and we'll draft him. But
that's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I know. But Henderson, I mean, the last 2 years hadn't looked that good. I'm thinking that also in the last 2 years he didn't have Marcus Stroud beside him, which is also a hindrance to the defense that they might be, you know, they have to look at two people. And maybe that's why he hadn't looked as good.
No.
And maybe Knighton could make that difference.
Now you know, the whole John's kind of reasoning behind, you know, not having Marcus, it's been an adjustment. Ah, phooey. You know, I mean, motivate yourself to be a good player. I don't need to have a running mate just to be good.
I like when you talk like that. That. I do.
Easy there, Vic. You're making me nervous.
Yeah, have another burrito.
But you know what? On Monday night, I thought John Henderson looked like he did from 2006.
That was Jack's assessment exactly on his show last night.
He really looked like a dominant player. He took on a couple double teams, and they couldn't move him. And I'm gonna share a moment with you, Vic,
please.
And maybe you recognized it, noticed it. Maybe you didn't from today's practice. Okay, teams on the practice field. All right, you know, boys head to the cool zone, midpoint of the practice. They all run to the cool zone, mm-hmm. you know, which is, you know, where they got fans and they can get Gatorade and water. Mm-hmm. Well, when they come out of the cool zone, they go to their next drill, whatever it may be. Guess who is the first one coming out of the cool zone leading the run to the defensive field?
Come on.
I swear to you, it was John Henderson. Couldn't believe it. John wow. Henderson was the first one running onto the practice field coming off of a break.
He's bought in.
Couldn't believe
He's
it.
He's all in.
Couldn't believe it. That may be the first time I have ever seen that in John Henderson's career.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just a little thing that I noticed there.
Vic was very hot today.
Yeah. By then you were over
really
there drinking water,
miserable.
Not paying attention to that. But I thought that was, I mean, what does it mean? I don't know. But when you have a good game, okay, and then the next practice, padded practice, mm-hmm. you're kind of leading away here, I thought that was pretty interesting.
It is.
So
I'm not buying the Marcus Stroud thing. That's
a bunch of phooey.
Yeah. First of all, Marcus Stroud hadn't played football here since 2005. He got hurt the week of the season opener in 2006 and never recovered. He literally didn't practice that year. And that was his first real down season. And it was a down season because of the ankle, not because of he was losing his skills. The guy was playing on one leg. And he was doing a heck of a job playing hurt on that one leg. But nonetheless, he wasn't the player he was prior to that injury. So therefore, John Henderson had his greatest season as a professional football player when Marcus Stroud had his worst. You see, that doesn't go. It just doesn't go. It's, you know... If you could say that Stroud was able to hold up in 06 because of Henderson, which would be more apt, mm-hmm. a more apt description, would it not, Jeff?
That would be.
Okay.
355-NFL-1. Let's break. Phone lines are stacked. We'll try to clear all of them out in the final segment of this show. When it returns on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Brian Sexton for the Big D Building Center, owned and operated locally by the Dawkins family here in Jacksonville since 1921. Let's see. Put my statistical skills. Oh, that's 88 years. Now, look, if you're looking for windows, siding, doors, you know, the things that help the exterior of your house look good and maintain it over time, especially here in Florida where the hurricane season can be so vicious, go visit the folks. They're at 1326 West Beaver Street, and they've got crews that can do it for you, or you can do it yourself. That's the beautiful part about it. They've been here working hard to be the home improvement superstore that you can count on all those years. So, look, if you're looking for an opinion on something, then by all means, go and see them. If you're just looking to see the kinds of products, then stop by their office, their showroom, and let me make sure I've got the address right for you, 1325 West Beaver Street. Call them at 350-6600. For 88 years, they've been doing it for Jacksonville. Let them do it for you. The Big D Building Center.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Final segment of Jaguars This Week for Wednesday evening. Don't forget Jaguars and Buccaneers right here on these very airwaves. The only place you'll participate if you're not sitting in the stadium is News Talk Radio WOKV. Our tailgate show starts at 4:30. Told Sam Jordan will be along for that this week. And a pregame show starts at 6:30, kickoff at 7:30, followed by the scoreboard show and the postgame show, the Winn-Dixie postgame show. 355-NFL-1. Adam has been waiting down in Mandarin. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Good.
I just want to, you know, call in, you know, not really a question, more like make a comment, you know, on how disappointed I am about, you know, some of these Jaguar fans. I mean, I have guys coming into my restaurant, you know, all week long, you know, just really bashing some of these guys, you know, about, you know, after every loss or after every guy they didn't sign. You know, I've lived here in Jacksonville for about 6 years, and, you know, I'm a diehard, hardcore fan, you know. I mean, I root for them after every loss or whatever, you know. But, you know, before I moved here, I lived in New Jersey, and I was a Giants fan then. And, you know, I never heard a fan say I wasn't going to renew season tickets because they didn't draft a guy from Rutgers or NYU or because we got swept by the Giants that year. You know, it's just really disheartening to hear some of these, you know, guys talk like that. But, you know, I just wanted to call and make a comment, you know, just letting you guys know that there is intelligent fans out here.
I'll tell you what, Adam, I really mean this. My heart bleeds for you, and for everybody like you in this town, who loves this place and loves having a team with the name Jacksonville in front of it, and I'm especially sensitive to this week because, let me tell you, we got a situation coming up on Saturday. Folks, buckle up, get ready for it. There's going to be what did Ron Zook used to call it? Noise in the system. You're going to see aerial shots of this stadium in newspapers. You're going to see attention being given to this situation here. I'm very afraid
it will
for the attendance for the attendance on Saturday. I think it is of grave concern. There are going to be eyes on it. There are going to be camera lens focused on it. There are going to be stories written about it, and I've been here for 15 years now. This is my hometown. This is the team I cover. You know, you can always tell when you're for a writer, for a reporter, when your heart gets into the team is there for the place you live and the team you cover, because it's that old thing. I can say bad things about it, but don't you dare say anything bad about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. I got you.
You know, I mean, I'll say edgy things, but if I'm out of town and somebody says this or that, you know, then I get real defensive, and I'm feeling a lot of that right now. This Saturday is the prospects for attendance this Saturday are not good.
And I'm just asking the question here. It's a preseason game.
Yeah,
it's still going to cause that kind of furor.
But you see, in Miami, there was no one there. But
right.
they had 60,000 was tickets distributed.
Gotcha.
Which was their general seating.
Bowl seating.
which meant that that game could be televised, as this is what Harvey Green told me at dinner the night before, because they were the general bowl type of seats that were sold, and they could show it in Miami. We're looking at a circumstance on Saturday here where the general bowl seats are going. There's going to be empty sections. Yep. So I'm Adam, I'm with you. There are a lot of people like you. We need more like you. Buckle up. You know, it's going to get rugged.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab another caller here before the show comes to a close. Richard's on the north side. Hello, Richard. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a question for Jeff. I saw a guy, I think he played on special teams, number 53, last name Williams.
Yeah, Thomas Williams.
Is he just a jar on the shelf, or he's just a number on the field is playing as it? Looks pretty good.
I think he's got a chance. He actually had a couple nice plays, came up, made a real nice hit at one point on a running play. But, you know, the linebackers, you have three linebackers that are going to start, and then behind that you're looking at Brian Iwu, and I think Russell Allen, the free agent player from San Diego State, I think they really like him. And then with the prospects of going to a possibly 3-4 look, does that mean maybe they keep an extra defensive end instead of six linebackers?
If you're going to 3-4, you need more linebackers.
No. But with Quentin Groves and Derek Harvey.
What's Derek Harvey? What is he?
He's an end that can be like a Greg Ellis type at times.
I saw him out in the slot.
Yeah. Greg Ellis has done that. Willie McGinnis has done that.
Okay.
So, you know, so 3-4, is he the rushback, or is he the Greg Lloyd, the Joey Porter?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but so my question becomes, and his question is about Thomas Williams, is Thomas Williams a lock? No, I don't think so. I think that they would have to keep six for Thomas Williams to have a chance. If it's only five, I don't think he has a chance, because I think they really like Brian Iwu, and if they keep six, then I think Lamar Miles and Thomas Williams are going to be battling for that sixth spot.
You're forgetting a guy who's hurt right now, Tim Shaw.
He's back on the field now.
Is he?
Yeah, I'm counting him, and I think, and he's right in there.
Yeah,
he's right in there with Thomas Williams, and then also, well, I think he was going to make it. I think Lamar Miles, Thomas Williams, and Tim Shaw are battling for one spot.
And Shaw has been a fantastic special teams player.
I think Russell Allen is a lock, and I think Brian Iwu is a lock, because Brian Iwu can play special teams.
Yes,
Brian Iwu is a very good special teams player, and Russell Allen is a good football player.
We have about 2 minutes left. Let's quickly try to grab Lee downtown. Hello, Lee.
Hey, I have a question. Regarding the pricing of the tickets and the games not being sold out, has anybody looked at the price for, you know, just in general, a family of four? They're going to spend quite a bit of money. Once you get down, you get the tickets, you get in parking, you know, get inside. You're talking quite a bit of money, not only just with the economy, but most people don't have the money to dole out $200 or $300. I know it's good entertainment, but if there was some way that they could work out like a family package or something like that.
No, it can't. But they've got so many packages, more packages than any team in the league has.
This
half
team has
pack,
the most
pack.
Fairly priced tickets in the league.
The second cheapest ticket in the league. The second least expensive ticket in the league. They are doing everything they can to sell you a football ticket. They are bending over backwards. The traffic situation, the way they move traffic here after a game, is like nowhere in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we, Jeff and Brian and I and Joe, we go all over the league. We see all these ballparks and you leave the ballpark there and sit in traffic, monumental traffic, and when we have police escorts and stuff like that, I mean, the experience here is so painless, so unbelievably painless from a pricing standpoint and from a transportation standpoint that it's like none other in the league.
It's pretty good setup.
Yeah, and the game day value in a survey they did of fans all over the league, this guy's team is sixth. Among in terms of everything that you experience besides the game.
So we're done.
Have a great night, everybody.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station for Jaguars football, AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.